May 9th, 2018, it's the Watt for Pedro show. Watch for Pedro show. And Pedro, Brother Matt, last moment got sick. He went on a trip, you know. He just retired from being a teacher. And I guess he got a little sick. He was in, down San Diego way. And but he's going to heal up, you know. And it's not too bad. It's flu, I think. Otherwise, I'm not totally alone because of the engineering marvels of those good people there in Estonia with the Skype software. I'm joined by Serena Yost. Welcome aboard.
Hi, how are you doing? Thank you.
I'm glad to have you aboard. Thank you, Howard Wolfen, for making the connect. We started with John Coltrane doing Alabama, something live from Birdland, and then Winda from your new record. Serena, tell me about your earliest musical recollection.
Oh, you know, I guess the most strong one I have is going to a concert, like a classical music concert with my parents, and there was no room in the audience. The place was totally sold out, and so they stuck us under the piano. And to me, that was just a life-altering experience. I was really young, but to hear a concert pianist, like, right from below the piano blew my mind.
And what town was this?
This was in East Lansing, Michigan, Michigan State University.
Is yeah, Spartans, green and white.
Yes.
Because, you know, we had a kind of a famous guy here on the lakes, Magic Johnson.
Oh, yes. Incredible. Yeah.
And I got to play there once, opening up for the Beastie Boys.
So, oh, really?
Yeah. I've been there a lot. It's kind of, if you make your hand like a hand to show people where you are in Michigan, it's in the middle.
You got it. You've got it down.
Okay. So, what, it was like the Philharmonic or something? It was just the local symphony?
It was. I think it was a local symphony with an international guest, and it was a woman piano player, you know. And, I mean, I have a lot of musical memories of singing and playing music with my family and all of that, but that was one that
That's the earliest. Okay, let's talk about your pad. Was there music people, I mean, besides just listeners, was there music makers in your house growing up?
Yes, my father played violin, and my brothers also played violin, but me, I wanted to play the big one.
The bigger violin. But not the biggest one.
No, not quite. I'm not that big.
Yeah. No, incredible range of cello. I mean, I think it has the biggest range of all those similar-looking instruments. Pretty incredible. The only weird thing for me was always the way he had to play it.
But
it
you mean sitting down?
Yeah,
sitting down.
Between the legs, mm-hmm. You know? I've seen some guys try to. I saw ELO once in when they were kind of funny, you know, before they mm-hmm. got terrible. And mm-hmm. the guy tried to play sideways, one of them. They had two guys.
You know, there actually are a couple of cellists who are doing that, especially if they kind of strum it. And then there's this guy named Mike Block who invented a cello strap. So some people are starting to play standing up. But, you know, I actually like sitting down because you kind of play when you play, your feet are going into the ground in this way. So it sort of connects you into the earth, which is part of how you play.
Oh, sure. And it also frees up both hands so they can go wild.
Exactly. You know, exactly.
You know, I have much, much respect for. What about, we're getting a little ahead of ourselves, but versus Ron Carter in his piccolo bass. Ah, because mm-hmm. fourths, fifths. That's the difference. There's
you
more drama. There's more drama with the fifths.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny, like, people think that I could automatically play the bass, but actually it's kind of confusing, you know, because of the difference between the fourth and fifth is close,
yeah.
You know?
But,
so,
you know, when you go up and down on the strings, there's much more drama, much closer cluster with the fourth. But let's go back when you're young. Okay, you're pop. Usually, children of musicians, they have to play. They had to learn how to play. Did your pop, like, say, I want you playing?
Well, you know, he wasn't a professional, so he was more of a hobbyist.
Okay.
And it was sort of invited, you know. It was like we were encouraged, but I wouldn't say we were forced. It wasn't like I was locked into a practice room like I know some people were.
Right. Right. Well, was there, like, a piano in the living room?
No piano, okay. But we would play string quartets or string trios, and then, you know, as we were doing that, I was, like, often stuck with a sort of simpler cello part in the quartet, so I started inventing singing lines, which is sort of when I started singing and playing, you know, early.
Let's get right on the cello. When did you first put a cello in your hands?
I was 9 years old, and it was through a public school program, you know.
Remember those days.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, so, and then it took me a couple of years. I was sort of just enjoying it, but then I started taking private lessons after a couple of years.
Okay, so that first one that you held at 9 years old, is that the one you end up playing? Like your folks?
I'm sorry, I just lost you for a second there.
Well, like your folks got you the cello, or did you just handle somebody else's? Was that the one?
Oh, you know, actually no, because I was kind of a smaller person. I was a kid, so I didn't have a full-size cello initially.
They do that with cellos, you know, too. I know they do that with violins.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, because it's a lot, you know, your hands are only so big.
Yeah,
so,
right.
But then, actually, the cello that I got, the full-size cello that I got, came to me because my family would vacation in northern Michigan, you know, when you put the hand up there where the pinky is.
Sure. Scotty, the drummer of the Stooges, he had a cabin up there. There's an island.
Oh, yeah.
Drummond Island. And they call that stuff the UP and the Boundary Waters and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Well, so we were in this place called Atwood, which was like the Grand Traverse Bay area. And we were playing music like in the summer, but, you know, we were on vacation and playing in the woods and whatnot. But we would, at the end of the summer, we would perform for the people who rented us the house. And that guy, he was an old school teacher named Stanley Smith, had a cello in his basement wrapped in a brown blanket. And that is the cello that I have now.
Oh, wow. Wow, thank you, Mr. Stanley.
Yes, incredible, yeah.
So what he was thinking, man, it's not getting any use down here. Why don't you use it?
Yeah, and, you know, it was like, it was pretty dramatic. It was wrapped in a green-brown army blanket and had been there for years. And I learned later, just before he died, that it had been a way to pay a bank loan. So someone owed someone money, and they said, I don't have the cash, but here's this instrument.
Like a collateral.
Yeah, so lucky for me.
Yeah, wow. Things work out trippy. So your first gigs actually are like playing with your family for this cat. Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you probably did stuff at school, too, recitals and...
Yeah, and I would, you know, earn a little money in high school playing, like, you know, background music for people, stuff like that. And I was also sort of singing at the same time I was kind of going into that. So,
were you in the choir? Were you in the school choir?
Yeah, I was, actually. And then I had these two friends that I would sing harmonies with. We would just get together on a porch, you know, and sing harmony, which was really nice.
Now... Might have been a little trippy, because the other cats at school doing music probably after school in the garage doing bands, and they probably not a big call up for the cellos, right?
Yeah, not at that time, but, you know, actually, like, there's so many bands that have cello players now, right?
Yeah, right.
You know, and in cities, there were people, like, you know, all kinds of people who were still starting to play the cello in non-classical conditions, I guess, you know, in different contexts.
Yeah.
So, you know, and there was, like, and so by the time I came to New York, there were definitely people that I could look to for that.
Sure. Down the hallway, right? Hey, let's play Hallway off your new
record.
Okay.
these days are small and gone. In the flashlight lights crashed open the scab to look at the young skin of visitor prison, to let the bright light in to where Metropolis fills its jungle gyms. It's obvious. Yeah.
и във вашата Македония.
Ова се църни денови, по-добро дома остани, небото ке не поплави.
Имам 5 пушки. Нека биде ми та река сила. Мир, како што се вели меѓу нас. Јас ќе ви ги дадам пушките, а вие ќе ми дадете песа, дека нема да ги схватите против нас. Разбрате? Ти, синане, секола. И вие двајте солунчани. И ти, даскале, ќе носите војна.
Јас чао шлемажам. А ќе се борам за нашите животи.
Тогаш пушката нека ја земе арбинчето Дуко, а сега пред попот ќе дадете песа. Кој има татко и мајка, се заколне во нив. Кој нема татко и мајка, ќе се заколне во децата. Кој нема деца, во Господ ќе се заколне.
И во вашата Македонија. И во вашата Македонија. И во вашата Македонија.
Да, 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 да osjetiš. Niko vano ručku. Ručku nema da osjetiš titul. A dodaj mi tu. Neku krpu.
Eto sam.
Dodaj mi i tu. Neku harpu. Ratatka.
If I find you in a ghetto, in a dead end street, or here when you're hanging from a burning tree, in a park surrounded by the fence of balls and weasel in the glove store, in blades of puppy dogs, yeah, yeah, I'll walk you home. Yeah, yeah, you'll never be alone. If I'm finally getting out of dirty Eskimo bark, bet a giant playing bluebirds on an empty star, yelling jokes, ducks, and passing smoke. We're crazy, make a party, blowing nose and giant's clothes. Yeah, yeah.
Oh,
Watford Pedro show. We heard Holloway, Serena Yost's new album. Duo Decibel System has a new record, too, out of Cleveland. And that we heard Fly. And then another Ohio guy, Robert Pollard. You know, one of his 10 million songs, obvious number one. Kodarashi Lele out of Bulgaria. Vasco Adenasoski and Drogi doing Krini. Well, it's probably Cherni De Novi out of Macedonia. Sarlo Akrobata, Serbia, Ljubivana Priča. That's Brother Koya, incredible bass man. The Details out of Romania with Girls on the Beach. Croatia band Snooze in Motion. Yeah, in English, okay. I'll Walk You Home, The Farther South out of Tel Aviv with Before the Party Began. And finally, Clement, Serena Yost. I don't know why. When I read a name like Clement, I got to think of a pope. Right? Because there ain't a lot of cats named Clement.
Yeah, can I give you my secret?
Yeah, please.
Okay, so the church that I recorded the album in was built in 1838, and it's in the Chelsea neighborhood of New York City. It's a beautiful old church called St. Peter's. And the land was given to the church by none other than Clement Clark Moore, who was the guy who wrote The Night Before Christmas.
Oh, wow. Which ended up on greeting cards and turning it Xmas into a whole industry, right?
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, who would have thunk?
Yeah, because people didn't really give presents. It was, I think it was even banned in England for a little while. It was too pagan or something. And this, Mr. Clement there, yeah, we got to thank for coming up with this. Also, the imagery comes out of that poem, a lot of the stuff, because it was all a bunch of separated little stories. And so he got it all together where he's kind of pagan, kind of Christian, kind of all kinds of stuff.
Yeah,
That's interesting. So, okay, let's talk about making this new record. Did you have in mind to do it at this church?
I knew that I wanted to do it in a non-commercial space and not in a traditional studio setting. And I went all over New York. I went to Brooklyn to look at synagogues. I went to Jersey to look at a church.
And you know, I recorded in a synagogue in, who are those guys? Government Mule.
Oh, yeah.
They did a whole album in a it was like old timey, right? And it was a great sound in there.
Yeah, so I mean the funny thing was, it was kind of a beautiful thing. Like, I went everywhere to look for the perfect spot, and it ended up being just a few blocks from where I live. You know how that goes? You go looking for something, and then it's right in front of you. It was there the whole time.
You were talking about going from Michigan to New York and finding people. Yeah, what happened? I ran over that. You graduate high school.
Yeah, and I went to college to a couple of different places. It was a little rough for me to get my degree, but I finally did. And you know,
what schools? I'm curious.
I went to Earlham College in Indiana, which is a Quaker school. And then I left there, and
that must have been trippy, right?
Yeah, it's an amazing school, but it wasn't quite the right one for me in terms of like my creative expression. But then I was in Africa and in Europe working for a little bit. And then I ended up finishing at Michigan State University.
Wow.
With sort of a humanities degree with a sort of emphasis on philosophy. That was my main interest.
Okay, so you're full circled. And then you decide to go to New York.
Yeah, then I came to New York, and you know what? I came here to work with a visual artist, a sculptor, because at that time I was pretty interested in visual art. And I had someone, you know, said to me, "Oh, you play the cello?" I said, "Yeah, but I have to figure out where to ship it." And they said, "Well, why don't you ship it to my house?" So I just met this guy, and I shipped the cello there. And meanwhile, someone stopped over at his house and said, "Whose cello is that?" And he said, "Oh, this woman, she just moved here." And then, lo and behold, it was a friend of the band, Rasputina.
So three cellos. Yeah, from Colombia. I was label mates with you, Serena.
Yeah. Oh, my God. That's amazing.
I was 14 years on Colombia Records.
Oh, my God.
I remember. Yeah, I remember them giving me this Rasputina CD, and I think we played some gigs together even.
That's incredible. Well, you know, I'd be curious to know when it was. I was in the band just for like 3 years, and then, you know, they continue to this day, but it was sort of like
I think it was an early version.
Oh my God, that's amazing. amazing. I love it. So we know each other from before.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think I always started to figure out, like, I kind of need to do my own thing, whatever it is. I don't know what it is yet, yeah. but I know I have to do it. It was the first time I'd ever played in a band, you know, and, but it kind of, like, broke open the door for me, and then, you know, that was just the beginning.
Speaking of breaking open the door, well, did they ask you to wear the corset?
You know, I still have one of those corsets.
That's some wild outfit.
Yeah. Okay. You know, now for me, for my own performing, I like to be able to really breathe. And so I'm without a corset.
Were those old tiny ones?
Some of them were, and some of them...
You know, I'm talking about, like, whalebone or some shit.
Yeah, and they were custom-made. I had a custom-made one.
Okay.
It's beautiful, aesthetically very beautiful
outfit,
I think.
What's the difference between a corset and a bodice?
I don't know.
Okay.
A corset, you kind of...
I thought you might know, because I don't know.
You know.
It's just old words for ladies' underwear, that's all.
Yeah, I love it. Maybe it's your new specialty.
Okay, so you do 3 years with the Rasputina, that's your first band, and but you got to go on your own.
Yeah, and I'm playing with other songwriters. I think that I might want to become a jazz cellist at one point, so I go to California to study jazz. And
where?
And
CalArts?
No, it was actually at Stanford University.
Oh, up north.
You know, it was a summer jazz workshop.
Sure, Palo Alto.
And yeah, exactly. And then I realized after that, like, wow, if I want to be a jazz musician, I'm going to have to, like, dive into the deepest part of the ocean and study this for 10 years at least, you know?
Yeah.
So I kind of realized, like, okay, it's good to know about improvising, and I can improvise enough, but I don't think, I really just wanted to be singing. So I kind of used that information that I got and then started writing my own songs.
Oh, you wanted to be singing? You wanted to get rid of the cello?
No, but I just wanted to be doing it. I wanted to be singing as well, you know?
Okay.
So I do sing and play guitar, and I sing and play cello, but this record, you know, that we're talking about today is just cello and voice.
Right.
Love it.
I really like it. I dig it. So, and we can get into it now, how you did it. You picked out this church, Mr. Clement deeded the land to, and after exploring a bunch of things. And then what would you hire mobile or something? People to come in there with some equipment?
Yeah, what I did was I got in touch with my friend Adam Gold, who's a beautiful musician and drummer, but also does, like, location recording.
Uh-huh.
And he and I went in there, just the two of us, and we had 8 microphones, and we set up in the church, you know. So I was on the altar, and there was a close mic on my voice and a close mic on the cello and a bunch of room mics and a couple of mics in the pews, you know. You get the picture.
Yeah,
so it was
usually I thought they did that stuff with just 2 mics, just stereo things. That's tricky.
Yeah, this was, we had a lot of options. And then, you know, the mixing happened with this guy named Chris Butler, and his job was to sort of choose which mics worked best for what songs, you know?
Yeah, right.
And that, I'm sure you know, is like, there's such an art to that.
Absolutely. As much as playing an instrument or singing.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and for me, one of the things that happened around this project is everyone who was involved was just so incredible, you know? So I felt very blessed to be working with people I knew. Like, I've chosen you, and you just do your thing, because you know what you're doing much better than I do, you know?
A lot of autonomy.
Yeah, yes. I believe in that creatively anyways. I really like to choose people for their qualities and then just let them go.
Let the freak flag fly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, smart. Because, maybe more options, more things can happen. Things aren't as uptight.
Exactly. And, like, you know, my mind is like, I know about certain things like singing and playing and maybe about the writing, but I don't know that much about mixing. So being open is essential to the process.
But at the other hand, knowing your limitations.
Oh, my God. Yeah, which each of us has so many.
Absolutely.
You know,
and that's why picking out a team is important, because that's how we can cover for each other.
Exactly. And, you know, and I feel like people are often at their best given a lot of freedom to do their thing.
Right. You set them up, you give them a, I don't know, a corral, and then, up goes the gate, and Let him come bucking out.
exactly, yeah.
Because I think that's where you get, because when you get down to it, you know, even with instruments and technique and all that, it is about people.
Mm-hmm.
It used to be in the old days. It is now. Mm-hmm. I think it's going to be that way in the future.
Yeah, and I think it's about, you know, finding the people that make sense for you. Like, my aesthetics are a certain thing or a range of things, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And if I choose someone to mix the album, it should be someone who is sort of in my wavelength somehow. Or, you know, we're on each other's rate. We kind of get each other, you know? I think that's really essential.
Yeah, yeah. Otherwise, yeah, there can be problems just in communicating.
Yeah. So I feel extremely lucky, you know, that really this whole project, I've felt like, even the church, you know, the being able to use the church in the way that we did, I feel like there's just a lot of, I don't know, I guess you could say grace or really positive things happening around the project.
Yeah, stuff came together to make it happen.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'd call it grace, too. Hey, we're at the end of the first hour of the May 9, 2018 edition of Watt for Pedro Show. Special guest, Serena Yost. Hold tight for hour two. May 9, 2018, it's the second hour of the Watt for Pedro Show.
Thank you.
Watch for Pedro show. We start off the second hour with Silver Star from Serena Yost off her new album, and Spirit Valley after that with Give Trance a Chance. Disorder with Through the Walls. After that, Here Lies Man. Here Lies Man. What do you call that? What do you call that? When you have eponymous. It's the same name, right? Eponymous. Usually it's a band, right, that they're going to call their first album the name of their band. I remember Albert Bouchard, the brain surgeon, he just said, fuck it. He called his album Eponymous. And then M.B. Jones with the demo of Breaking the Law, Genetic Law, to Pusan. Cleveland Steamers with Shut Up. And then It's a Delight, Serena Yost. Yeah, I was curious. It's a Delight?
Yes, it is.
I mean, no. Can I ask you, Serena? Are you one that likes to talk about your songs, or are you like I had Mr. Tom last week, and he says, "Man, the song should talk for themselves," which I'm into both ways.
Yeah, you know, I think I'm open to talking about them. You know, and
okay,
I
want
other people to hear what they hear too. You know.
Yeah, of course. And that can be kind of trippy, huh? Like maybe 180 degrees from what you meant, right?
Oh, my God, yes, you know.
Right.
You know, one time I wrote a song, and it was the lyric was an early song, and it was I saw a Mary in a bag by the church steps today, and it was literally a little Mary figurine in a paper bag. And it was such a striking thing. And someone asked me, and they said, is a Mary in a bag a tampon?
Oh, yeah.
Can you imagine?
That makes sense.
So, yeah, I mean,
people
God,
bring their
I would
own
have
stuff.
Never thought that.
People bring their own stuff to it. I think that's okay. But what about It's a Delight? Is that about a tampon? No.
No. You know, It's a Delight, I think, was a sort of poetic choice for that song, because on this album there's songs that I wrote before going into the church, and there's other songs that were part of the improvisations that I did in there.
Sure.
So it was totally spontaneous and unplanned, and I was thinking, you know, what does this song feel like? And there is something where I'm sort of searching in there, but there's I feel like there's something sort of optimistic and enjoyable about it, you know? So
yeah. Do you remember Gumby?
Yeah.
Okay, this little clay cat, he's in the toy store. One of his favorite chows was the clam dandy. He loved clam dandies. And that's, for some reason, that's what this song made me think of. When I was a boy watching Gumby and the clam dandies.
That's great. See, I love that, you know.
It's very strange.
It makes me happy, you know, when different people bring so many different kinds of listening to the
okay,
same song.
Okay, we're gonna play Red Door. Tell me something about that.
Oh, it's a mystery, but I'll give you the key to the mystery. So the church, if you were to come to New York City and come to St. Peter's Church on 20th Street, and you would walk by and you would see it, and you would see that it has red doors.
Ah. Probably three of them.
Yeah, in fact, that's exactly right. And you know, actually, and I didn't really think about that when I was recording, but it just sort of came to the surface subconsciously. So.
Path leads to the red door. The path leads to the door. The path leads to the red door. Open it.
She submissive, she dominates. 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3. I want to give you a tribute. One, two, three.
Thank you.
Why for Pedro show, we heard Red Door for Serena Yost, and you got the clue, people. So you go by St. Peter's. In other words, I know there's a Trinity Church on the east side by Wall Street. That's a famous New York City church. But you're talking Chelsea, so like the 20s on the west side.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. In fact, speaking of hatches, well, you know my pub is a sailor, so I call them hatches. They've been selling off hatches from the Chelsea Hotel. Like, I saw a picture on the web of egg. They were selling eggs hatch. And
It's not a good thing, you know.
It's strange, huh?
I mean, I'm sad to see, like, you know, the highest bidder getting everything in New York City,
right.
Particularly in Manhattan. There's a lot of people, there's a lot of money coming in that pushes a lot of really great things out. So I'm not...
So it ends up in somebody's, you know what I'm always reminded of is that last scene in Citizen Kane where he's got all that shit. It doesn't even get out of the boxes, right? He goes to Europe to collect all that art, and it's just sitting in fucking crates. You know, like Rosebud, you know, as the fucking snow globe falls out of his hand, you know, and all this shit's just, so yeah, you're right, shit hoarders. I think Jim Morrison said that, right? Admirals and shit hoarders or something. I think his daddy was an admiral, one star, small one. Many birthdays after that from Austin with a cover of Flamin' Lips, Convinced of the Hex. And then out of the city, Girls with Guns, that's Lonnie. Lonnie's Snake Fingers' daughter. And I think Howard Drew Feldman has something to do with this. He's mixing it, tribute. And finally, we heard Carnival Kitchen with Zigana. And Carnival Kitchen was the band that Ig saw Brother Steve play Saxon and asked him to be part of the Funhouse. And you know, how Brother Steve went on tour with Snake Finger when he was doing that blues stuff near the end of his life. And so I thought of him. And it's trippy, too, because, you know, he was a sax man, but there's a lot of your instrument on there. And so I was thinking of you. What about, has this church had gigs?
Does it have gigs?
Yeah.
Yeah, it has regular classical things, and it has other kinds of projects, like, you know, the band 30 Seconds to Mars?
Yeah, I heard
Jared Leto's project, 30 Seconds to Mars. It's a, you know, proper rock band.
Sure.
They've recorded there, and they've done shows there, so it's an incredibly liberal place.
Yeah, but have you been thinking about maybe you create your record for a gig for people?
You know, I did actually do that a couple of weeks ago, and on the 19th of April, I did my release show there, and it was great. It was just packed with people, and it was...
Oh, wow, so the release gig was actually where you made it.
Yeah, you know, the incredible thing is, yeah, the pastor there, this guy named Father Stephen Harding, he's an awesome guy, and he's kind of taken a shine to me, and so I got to use the church, which is incredible.
Yeah.
And, you know, I really like them, because they do a lot of good works in the community. They're just an activist type of place. So I got to sing and play in there, and it was thrilling. I mean, when you play and when you sing a note out, it goes into the distance, into the rafters, and it's amazing to perform there.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think those things were built for the human voice.
Oh, yeah.
And you know, a lot of rock and roll, maybe not big Catholic cathedrals, but little Baptist churches, you know, a lot of rock and roll comes out of church singing, mm-hmm. because, yeah, you lose it, right? Kind of get wild.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's great, right? It's a little bit, you know, just that release that every human being needs, you know, just get down.
Right. Or thinking of people like Aretha or even Elvis. I know he learned to sing in church.
Oh, yeah. Well, you can kind of hear it when someone was a church singer. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like something like in the soul quality of what they're doing. I don't know how else to put it, but it's just there's a root in there that's really deep.
You got a station there called WBAI, and it's part of this, I think, five stations called Pacifica. And we got one here in SoCal, KPFK. And on Sunday mornings, 90.7 FM, they have Gospel Caravan. And they play this stuff, man. And my mom used to call them holy rollers, you know, because they get wild.
Oh, they're incredible, like those bands like the Trumpeteers and, you know, people like Mavis Staples. And yeah. I mean, they're
Steve incredible. Hodges is playing with Mavis Staples right now, the guy who did my drums for my first opera, speaking
of
which.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Really? That's incredible.
Steve. Yeah, well, she was playing with some fusion guys in, what's his name? He's on the first Cat Beefheart album.
Oh,
and
I don't
quit
know.
The band. Yeah, you would know his Leo Kottke.
Oh, Leo Kottke, yeah.
Yeah, he quit when the captain walked off the stage in Monterey. And he said, "Fuck this guy." But he told Mavis, man, get rid of the fusion guys. Get Rick Holstrom's little blues trio here.
Oh my God, that must be amazing.
And you know, I think she's the only one left of the family now.
I know she's really something. I mean, she can move a mountain. You know, she's incredible.
And, you know, this whole idea, too, that you have to, I don't know, go to pastures. Well, you know, they used to market rock and roll as a youth thing. And I'm glad that got thrown under the tractor or whatever, steamroller.
Yeah.
Because it's ridiculous. Music is music, huh?
I mean, and also different, you know, I never have been worried about what genre of music I'm into or not into. Like, I'll take it all, you know.
Okay, for example, when you did this gig for your release, did you have an opening band?
I did not, because I wanted it just to be like a listening experience of the album, so I decided not to. But when I play gigs like with my band, or often, you know, we have somebody, or sometimes I'll have a poet open for me, you know, or I'm interested in sort of shaking it out and seeing what happens, you know.
Really, so it doesn't have to be another cello lady singing.
No way. I mean, in fact, like, you know, just because I have a cello, it's like I'm really pretty darn far away from being a classical person, you know.
Uh-huh.
There's not too much, even though my training is that way, that's not what I do.
Well,
you
said improvise. And I got to say, man, a lot of great people, you know, I've been taken to these gigs to people here at L.A. and see, you know, Bartok and all these kind of incredible, the Wagner, Parsifal, and incredible stuff. And you know all those guys could play, but I bet you if you did not put music in front of them, a lot of them would be stumped. And see, you got into improvisation, so that will separate you, I think, big time from a lot of classical.
Yeah, yeah, and there's people like, I don't know if you know, like Arthur Russell. He was a cello player out of New York. He died from AIDS, but he was an incredible, incredible singing cellist, you know.
What about Tom Corman?
I don't even know who that
Skeleton
is.
Skeleton Crew. He played with Fred Firth.
Massacre
Tree or so. Okay. Yeah, this guy would play cello and also play bass and drums all at the same time and shit. Yeah, incredible.
He was around, I think, like earlier, and you know, and
some disease got him early. I don't know if it was HIV or anything, but it was something killed him early. But he was incredible talent.
Yeah, there are amazing, and in even New York, there's so many different kinds of people. But I don't have to be associated with other string players or anything. Like, it just so happens that I play the cello, you know?
Sure.
But but I'm open. Like, I like, you know, do you know Ruins, that Japanese punk band?
Sure.
You know, like, I love
mainly a drummer guy. He's been playing with the sax lady.
I mean, they're incredible. Like, I love them, and I love Debussy, and I like Katy Perry, you know? I mean, I'm open.
No, I think you think music is music. So do I.
Yeah.
Okay, we're at the end of the second hour, April 9, 2018, Dish Wap Peter Show, special guest Serena Yost. Hold tight for hour three. May 9, 2018, it's the third hour of the Wap for Pedro Show.
Happiness is like a bird with 20 wings. Try to catch him as he flies. Happiness is like a bird that only you can try to make him walk beside you. You can say the door is open wide. If you grab at him, woe betide you. I know because I've tried. Like a butterfly upon an April morning, very quickly taking fright. Happiness is come and gone without a warning. Jack-o'-lantern in the night. I will follow him across the meadow. I will follow him across the hill. And if I can catch him, I will try to bring you.
Walk from Pedro show. We started the third hour off with happiness, and Serena Yost, and she wants to tell you about it.
Yeah, so Happiness is a song that I recorded because I have great admiration for the writer, and the writer of that song is Molly Drake, and she is, I'm sure you've heard of, or hopefully you've heard of Nick Drake. So that
man
is Nick
killed
Drake.
Himself early.
So Nick Drake's mother was also very musical, and she was this amazing writer, and I discovered her songs and just fell in love with her.
Yeah, he had a really special voice.
Yeah, you know, and a special voice, and I think maybe a challenging disposition.
Oh, yeah, maybe a little depression.
yes, really, really hard, you know.
You could feel it in his voice. It's like, whoa.
Yeah, and when
and
you
it's not all artifice, you know, I think.
Oh, no, yeah. That's a person living that and, you know, and creating beauty out of it, which is really amazing. And his mother also, you know, is definitely a little dark, like the song Happiness has some dark elements to it, but she's also quite charming.
Right. You know, I'm always afraid of the ironic part of a title like that.
mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's like, careful for what you wish for.
Exactly. Well, it's a bittersweet thing, you know, and I guess a lot of things are, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I think a lot of our belief systems tumble out of that kind of endeavor thinking about that. And then we heard something from your town, a new band called $75 Bill with I'm Not Trying to Wake Up. Kat came to the... I did a gig with Danny Frankel,
oh,
D.C. drummer, guy who lives out here now, and Josh Hayden, Charlie Hayden's son.
Oh,
and after the gig, the cat just handed me the record. I said, yeah. I listened to it. It was like, whoa. And it's a part of this. You know, Nels Klein lives out where you live now. And it's because NYC's got the free thing going. Free doesn't mean inexpensive, people. It means they're a lot looser with the music. It's not an inexpensive town. Unless you want to have a good time on the water, take the Staten Island Ferry because it's free.
I love that you know that.
Oh, I've ridden on it sometimes 8-9 in a row. Got a little scared when the dude ran into the pier. They got pilot houses on. There's pilot houses on each side, so they just, you know, don't have to turn the boat around.
Yeah, no, I think that that's one of the, you know, special treasures of New York City. I always tell my tourist people that you got to go there.
That's the Econo ride. So Lullaby.
Hmm.
That's what we played after the $75 bill. Can you tell me about Lullaby?
Yeah, Lullaby is a song that I wrote the words to it, but it's based on a Brahms melody, and it's you know, Brahms was this tremendous composer, inspiring, and I have the melody sort of from my childhood, I think a lot of people have heard that melody, and then I wanted to write something really simple, like a simple gesture to go with it, so that's how that came to be.
You know, I wonder, because I mentioned Bela Bar talked to you. I read places where he got ideas for tunes by going into fucking little villages. Mm. And maybe Mr. Brahms heard a kid's song, maybe. You know what I mean? I know these guys are incredible music, and, you know, it means a lot of math and a lot of physics and a lot of incredible stuff to be these conductor, composer, music peoples. But I wonder if they have to get outside that box to find something simple to riff on.
I mean, I think it's totally true what you're saying, and that a lot of classical composers took melodies, folk melodies, and then elaborated on them, you know, and Bartok was, I mean, all that folk music that they had, that Hungarian folk music was really, it's in the songs, you know. I mean, Bartok happens to be one of my favorite composers. I love him, and I love how it's just going along. It's really beautiful, and all of a sudden it gets really twisted. Like,
the Magical Mandarin. And right in this part, they flip their violins over and start playing the back of the necks with the bows. Right? All these polyrhythms and trippy stuff. It's almost as the Rite of Spring sewing machine factory trip.
Yeah. I mean, it's really edgy, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, oh, my God.
It was. It was really a trip. The other dynamic I never realized before was how the conductor has to pull the musicians together.
Mm-hmm.
Even though they're incredible. I could see once they let go, it was that guy, Pierre Boulez.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. What about the cut? I'm going to play the cut here.
Yes. Well, the cut's a really personal song. You could listen to the chorus to get a sense of what it is, but it's sort of the cut that you, or a gash that you might receive in your life, and the things that flow from that, the good and the bad, and the bad and the good, you know? So it's about being on the bone, and about, I guess, feeling humbled. And when I was writing that song, I felt humbled by something. So, and it's probably the most athletic song on the whole album. It's like, I mean, it's like a super, you know, it's like a dance. Like what I'm doing on the cello there is pretty wild.
It's your version of Flight of the Bumblebee. Here we go.
Thank you. Thank you. myself inside. I started crossing by the street, walking straight forward, looking for something that could ease your pain. And you kept holding your bag in your hand, you were walking through something I did not know. I became quite curious about something that I could show. And then you stopped, you turned around, you looked at me, and it felt like a thousand stars came down from the sky. I'm holding back my hand, holding everything I have inside of me.
Thank you. se da la oportunidad de vivir de ser y de volver a empezar.
Oh.
For Pedro Show, last music for this edition, you just heard Great Conclusions. It's almost like it was scripted for this point of the show. And before that, we had Pyramid Blue doing, yeah, some stuff from Spain. La Oportunidad. Before that, Pajaro, Sunrise, Move Like a Ghost, Ginferno, Erta Allah, Gecko Turner ahead of that with I'll Do That. Before that, Dead Capo. With Moncatis Revisited. And of course, we started with The Cut, right to the bone, Sarita Yost. What about tour?
Yeah, it's going to be happening. We're booking shows right now. So we're looking at summer and fall. I'll probably be headed to Europe, maybe UK, Switzerland, where my family's originally from, and maybe Germany. So folks, if they're interested, can find out about it on my website. That those dates will be posted within the next week or two.
And that's SERENAJOST.com.
You got it. SerenaYost.com. Yep.
Yeah, people, when you see in Europe a J, it's usually a Y. But not in Spain, it's an H. We say Jose, not Jose. But we said Yugoslavia, not Hugoslavia. So that's how I remember. Now, the Italians, they got a soft J like us, so you don't have to worry in Italy. Actually, there's an Italian part of Switzerland.
There is, actually, yeah. Now, my family,
Lugano.
What's that?
Lugano.
Lugano. It's incredible there. One of my favorite places ever.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
Yeah. I like all the other, I guess there's one little canton ain't been to, but of course the German one's the big one, and then there's a French one, and then Italian. But
yeah.
Yeah. So, people, you should get over there and check out where the tour's coming and get to see this live. Do you have something planned now, Serena, for the West Coast, for SoCal?
I'm looking actually at July for that. So, people can, again, they're going to have to come back to the site, or if people want to be on the mailing list, they can contact me through my website also. And but I'll keep you posted, too, so
yeah,
you know.
Please, please. What about, are you thinking even ahead of after the tour? Are you thinking about next recording?
Of course. So I have a whole bunch of songs, a whole stack of songs, and I will probably do the next recording with my band. Some guitars, bass songs, cello stuff, but I'm thinking about integrating this kind of live approach again, because I really enjoyed it so much. You know, I love the rawness of working live and seeing what happens and just being really open to with the chemistry. So that's what I'm looking for.
You mean being in front of people instead of like a controlled thing in a studio?
Or like in a live setting, like let's say in a church or a studio. Yeah, like it could be in front of people, but also it could be in a church setting or other kind of setting where we just go for a live, like, we could be in the studio too, I guess, but I want to sort of do less overdubs and more live tracking.
Oh, okay, yeah, okay, like yeah. First take kind of thing.
Not
overdubbing. You're actually, the people playing are actually the way it's going to be.
Yeah, you know, I love working the other way too, but I've worked that way a fair amount, and I'm really interested.
I've read about Nat King Cole recording where the trumpet player has to move up closer for the solo. You know, there's no mixing.
Well,
there's no they're going right to a lacquer, $75 lacquer, which was the price of a used car. So if you fucked up, yeah, those guys, that was pretty balls out.
That's incredible to think about when you think about his recordings and in a way how pristine and beautiful they are,
incredible,
right?
Incredible, huh? Mm. Much respect. Well, I love what you're doing, man, and I can't wait for round two. I can't wait to see you here, too, when you come with this album here of this stuff from the church. It's been a big honor to have you on the show. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you. I really loved talking with you. It's so interesting, and your show is fantastic, so thank you so much.
Oh, you're most kind. People, it's been May 9, 2018 edition of the Wofford Peter Show. Special guest, Serena Yost. Keep your powder dry.